This is a tragic moment in all sorts of ways. We have both social and health related challenges that are significant. And there's something I think at least our students and I agree with, slightly untoward about trying to see this as a particular kind of opportunity. So we've actually settled on the word opening and trying to understand how this particular moment is an opening for additional conversation. It's an opening for exploration. It's an opening for trying to understand questions of equity and trying to understand race in relationship to higher ed and how that both exacerbates the system and invests in that kind of racist system that we're all sort of struggling to try to unpack right now.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to Digital to Learn. We're glad to be with you today, and I'm here with my co-host, Tiffany Snyder. Welcome, Tiffany.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Brad.
We are thrilled to welcome back Eddie Maloney and Josh Kim to talk about their newest book, The Low Density University. This book grew out of their series of articles on Inside Higher Ed that focused on the variety of models that could emerge as we face higher education in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. We must also mention that these guests have been included in the Digital to Learn Hall of Fame, and they also wrote another text called Learning Innovation and the Future of Higher Education. So before you are allowed to listen to this episode of Digital to Learn, you must absolutely go back and listen to our previous conversations with Josh and Eddie. We will also give extra credit if you read Learning Innovation and the Future of Higher Education. You will thank us for making those assignments. Welcome, Josh and Eddie.
Hey, Brad. Hey, Tiffany. Thanks for having us back.
Hey, Brad. Hey, Tiffany.
We're here to talk today about their newest book, The Low Density University. We had them on the show about 6 months ago, and they've been cranking out stuff left and right. This new book just hit the market, and we're excited to talk about it. But before we get serious, we want to ask them some insightful, provocative questions. Here's the first one. Favorite baseball team?
Well, I'm sad to say right now it's the Red Sox. Longtime Red Sox fan, but they're not doing too well. So definitely the Red Sox. No other team.
And before I tell you my favorite baseball team, I do just want to say how great it is to be back. Brad, this was the first podcast I was ever on, and I was quite nervous the first time, and you set us at ease, and it was a good time. So we're happy.
Right. Well, thanks. You did a great job.
So good.
Yeah. All right. So baseball team. So I grew up one subway stop away from Fenway Park. I used to go all the time to sit in the bleacher when it was just a few bucks. So definitely the Red Sox.
Wow. I would have predicted two different teams. I don't know.
I grew up on the line in Connecticut, either a Yankees fan or a Red Sox fan. So
okay.
You had to pick sides pretty quickly.
I couldn't work with Eddie if he was a Yankees fan.
Though. Yeah, no, it would. Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Well, we might not be able to keep you on the show based on how you answer this next question. So We'll see. This could be a dividing question too. All right, Downton Abbey, Tiger King, or Shameless?
Josh, it's all you.
So the 20-somethings who have been living in my house during COVID, one of them spent a lot of time watching Tiger King and less time doing remote learning. I think they were
I have to say, I'm really, really sad to say this. The only one that I've seen any episodes of is, in fact, Tiger King. And it's such a sad show. So that's a hard one. These are really rough.
I'm just hoping the people who are listening now are thinking, these two guys have no credibility whatsoever.
None.
I'm out of here.
None.
Okay, this one's easier. Kenny G, MC Hammer, or Weird Al Yankovic?
Eddie, this is yours.
No, thanks. I really, Brad, liked your first five questions the last time we were here much better than these, I have to say. These are brutal. I don't know if this is...
I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, return guests hazing or what's going on, but I don't know. I was told to say MC Hammer just because of the pants, but I think I'm going to have to go with Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah.
Of those, yeah.
Both of those are excellent choices. And Josh, you better not say Kenny G. That's all I have to say.
No, I would just say that the only music that I listen to seems to be music from the 90s when I was like in college and my musical taste seemed to have stopped then. and audiobooks, which you don't have. I don't know why you don't have audiobooks on your list, but that's what you should have listed.
So you don't have a choice between those three?
No.
Okay.
Josh, MC Hammer, Weird Al Yankovic, those are 90s.
Brad, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my husband claims to be third cousins with Weird Al, so that's an interesting fun fact for you. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
If it's true, I don't know if it's true. Our next question, sushi, Spam, or Pop-Tarts?
I'll take this one because if you're really brave, you can have sushi in New Hampshire.
I think I would have to go with sushi too, but not in New Hampshire. I think that would be my my choice.
And now my favorite question that I've ever written for any episode of Digital Tolerant. Here goes. Dandruff, body odor, or ingrown toenails?
So I was having trouble with this question. Is this something you would prefer to have? Would be the worst thing you could possibly have? Definitely don't want to have on someone else. What is the sort of proceeding to this question here?
Of the three, which would you most like to have?
Oh, I guess I'm going to have to go with dandruff. Yeah.
That's probably the least dangerous of the three.
Least dangerous, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm fine with all three.
It's a good one.
I never would have
distance.
Expected that. That's a great answer. Okay, let's get serious. Josh, I'm going to throw the first serious question to you. And this has nothing to do with body parts or musical preferences or what you want to eat. Your book seems like a perfectly logical follow-up to Learning Innovation and Future of Higher Education. Tell us the story behind this series of articles that you wrote for Inside Higher Ed and how that evolved into this book.
Sure. So I'll try to tell the story, but every time I tell it, Eddie thinks I'm just making things up. So
pretty much true, yeah.
You can get the true story from Eddie. So what happened was Eddie and I were actually on our book tour, and I say book tour in quotes, for our first book, Learning Innovation and the Future of Higher Education, when COVID hit. We were visiting other schools. We were visiting Johns Hopkins and George Mason. We did a big, great event at Georgetown with Brian Alexander. We were set to go to Michigan and Notre Dame and Penn and some other. It was great. Like, everything was wonderful. And then COVID hit, and obviously no one went anymore. So Eddie and I were in the practice. We were working together and writing, and, you know, as we'd been. And we were actually in the middle of doing this work of helping our institutions, and in Eddie's case, Eddie leading his institution's efforts to think about how to respond to COVID-19 going forward. We were having these conversations, and Eddie got the idea that we should write all these scenarios down in one place to give everyone a common language and a common structure. And Eddie had this idea, well, we should do all the scenarios. And I said to Eddie, well, people are not going to read, you know, more than 7 or 8. You know, I've been blogging for a long time. You got to be really short. And Eddie's like, well, no, we should really actually write how many scenarios we think and not so much worry about how people are going to receive it online. So we ended up doing 15. He actually ended up being right. And it turned out to be not only the most read thing on Inside Higher Ed that I've ever done, I think it might have been the most read thing on Inside Higher Ed.
Wow.
Like over 300,000. It's up there. And we knew that it had some legs to it. So we ended up writing out all 15 scenarios with individual pieces. And Hopkins Press wanted us to rework that for this short book that we came out with. So I think that's the origin story, but Eddie might disagree.
No, I think we've evolved it in a way that we're pretty much on the same highway here going forward. Josh has told the story that I had 15 scenarios in my head when we started to sit down and write all of these, but I didn't. And to Josh's credit, we both started to brainstorm on different scenarios, and we knew we had bookends. We knew we wanted to say something about what it would mean if we were all back in person and how that would change. Even if we were. And we knew that at the far end of the spectrum, there were questions about going fully remote, which now we know is the most likely scenario for most schools. But what would come in between and how people would start to think about the options and possibly creating some hybrids that would work along that spectrum was something we had to brainstorm. We had to start thinking through different models. And Josh's one, I think, rule was it had to be an odd number. I still don't understand the reason for that, but he was pretty adamant about it being an odd number. And we got to some number 11 or 12 or something, and I think we were just sort of trying to figure out a couple more that made sense, but we were also starting to realize that there were hybrids of pieces, and we could have gone on to 17 or 19 or 21 or some other odd number. You know, I think there's just a lot of different ways of thinking about this, but we wanted to create these kinds of nodes that would allow for mixing and matching them for people to kind of come up with their own approach. So in that sense, it really was this kind of brainstorming design session that Josh and I went through. And also Josh didn't mention this, and he should have. Before we even started that process, Josh had the idea that we should be thinking about and talking about the low density university. So the title of this book comes from a desire on Josh's part to really think about what it means. He's a demographer, so this is in his wheelhouse. What it means to think about density and population density and as a particular kind of challenge for institutions. And so all of this started within that context of what Josh set up for us to be thinking about. That's my origin story, Josh.
So we'll let the audience choose who they want to side with. We'll poll them down on Twitter. Was it Josh's version or was it Eddie's? But it was just so timely. And I think kind of stretched people's thinking beyond maybe a very narrow range of options. So kudos to you for doing that so well and so quickly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, we've had Brian Alexander on the podcast recently, so it's really neat to hear that you have connected with him and some of his futurist ideas. I can see the fit. That's the alignment between both parties, and that's awesome. Eddie, I know that you've written a lot about innovation in higher ed, and with what's happened this year, what do you think innovation looks like? How is it impacted in the short term and the long term within higher ed?
Yeah, that's a great question. So just first on Brian. Brian is a good friend. He's actually a faculty member in the program that I direct as well. So we have a longstanding connection with Brian. And in fact, I just got out of class with him a few minutes before this, before we started recording here. And he is... you know, he's a force of nature and an incredibly thoughtful thinker, as I'm sure you both experienced when you're working with him. The question of innovation is a challenge. We ran over the course of this summer, a course in this program that I direct. The program is called the Learning Design and Technology Program at Georgetown. It's a graduate program for master's students who are interested in investing in and trying to understand the future of higher education from a learning perspective, from a teaching perspective, from a design and technology perspective. But it's really about what is happening in higher ed and where are we going. We put together this course. Actually, Randy Bass, who you may know, put together this course mm-hmm. called The Big Rethink, which was really about trying to understand this moment in time with a bunch of current students, alumni, and prospective students of the graduate program coming together, interviewing people. Brian did these amazing interviews with folks across the country. I'm really trying to understand where we were and what we were doing. I bring this up in this context because there were two things that I think are worth mentioning when we think about innovation right now. One is we struggled in this big rethink with the word opportunity. I think a lot of innovation, especially right now, the phrase, you know, never let a crisis go to waste, often comes to mind. But this is a tragic moment in all sorts of ways. We have both social and health-related challenges that are significant. And there's something I think at least our students and I agree with, slightly untoward about trying to see this as a particular kind of opportunity. So we've actually settled on the word openings, or the word opening, and trying to understand how this particular moment is an opening for additional conversation. It's an opening for exploration. It's an opening for trying to understand questions of equity and trying to understand race in relationship to higher ed and how that both exacerbates the system and invests in that kind of racist system that we're all sort of struggling to try to unpack right now. So that sense of opening, I think, is one way of thinking about innovation as we move forward, you know, both short-term and long-term. What are the openings right now for a conversation around innovation? And then the second thing, I also give credit to Randy Bass for is the phrase latent innovation, which I think is probably right. I think what we'll start to see is innovations that will follow from this moment. They may not be innovations that actually directly come from or that we can look at right now and say we're going to change these things now. If you've been part of any of these conversations that are happening at institutions, you know that curricular change is bubbling, but it's not necessarily radically changing at most institutions. But that might happen. I think there's now a capacity for thinking about this in different kinds of ways. So you may start to see latent innovations happening, we hope. I think there are openings here for us to start to think about how we really take a look at where we are and what we're learning, both about the institutions that we're part of, but also about our students and the challenges that they face and how we can start to think about changes in institutions that will allow for that latent innovation to flourish. I'll stop there. Sorry, that was a long answer.
No, it's great. And I think that the terminology that you provided just provides a different way for us to think about innovation. So it makes me want to kind of sit back and ponder and reflect on what I've seen and think I'm going to see. So thank you for that explanation.
So Josh, if you look 5 years out, based on what's happening now, what are the threats and opportunities that we are going to be facing?
That's a great question, and Eddie and I have been talking about and trying to figure out what our next research and writing project is going to be about. And you know, we keep coming back to this question of where do we go from here? What can colleges and universities take away and learn and build on these openings that COVID-19 has provided? How can we talk about those range of possibilities? How can we understand how schools are thinking about what comes next? I think the challenge of that is we're now in such a radically uncertain environment today. We really don't know how the next few months are going to play out. Some schools have already moved to remote learning for the coming semester. Some schools like Dartmouth, we're planning to right now bring back about half of our student body for the fall term. And we don't know how it's going to play out during the spring. So we're in this very uncertain moment and we're wondering, well, can we really start to build on what we see coming out of this? And we write a lot about this in our first book, about the need for colleges and universities to build up the capacity for learning innovation, bring people to campus who are experts in learning science and have them work closely with faculty on programs. And we've seen that schools that have made this investment have been able to actually be very resilient during COVID. They were able to keep high levels of academic continuity. And we've also seen that institutions that outsourced that capability to online program management providers have had more of a challenge because you really did not have the people in place. So it's clear that this is a core competency for resiliency for every college and university. It's not clear how this is going to play out, particularly in an area of real economic challenges. You know, we really see that colleges and universities are having real economic challenges related to COVID. Costs are going up and revenues are going down. And how do you build new capacities in this very difficult economic environment. So anyway,
this has been an excellent episode of the Digital to Learn podcast. And we have exciting news.
The fun is not over. We have part two with Eddie Maloney and Josh Kim coming to you next week on Digital to Learn.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.